You are listening to the Culture Coach Podcast. This is the place where CEOs and people-first leaders come to boost productivity, extinguish burnout, and cultivate a vibrant culture that reflects a fully integrated mission, vision, and core values. Get ready to take your culture to the next level. I am your host, Wendy Brand. Welcome back to the Culture Coach Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Brand, founder of the Culture Coach and creator of the Core Culture Framework. For those of you who have not signed up for the free Culture Coach Roadmap webinar series, go to culturecoachwendy.com/webinar series. Each week for 3 weeks, I'll be walking you through the steps needed to create your culture strategy for 2026. And even if you can't make it, when you sign up, you get access to the replays. So go over to culturecoachwendy.com/webinar series and get signed up. Okay, this week I want to talk a little bit about conscious leadership. The book Conscious Leaders was published in 2020, and I came across the book about a year or so ago. It's helped me to articulate what I was thinking and feeling about leadership and has really influenced some of the programs that I have created, namely the Empowered CEO, which you can get on the waiting list for that at culturecoachwendy.com/CEO. It's a program, as the name states, for CEOs. It's a 6-month coaching program. It's a lot of fun. There is a wait right now, but we will likely be starting in January. So if you have an interest, go check it out, culturecoachwendy.com/CEO. Now, this book is written by John Mackey, who's the former CEO of Whole Foods, which if you're not in the United States or if for some reason you're not familiar with Whole Foods, it's a grocery store that was started in 1980 in Austin, Texas, which is just right up the road from me. But he started that business with a philosophy of holistic health and obviously focused on bringing Whole Foods, name of the company, to the masses. And today they have over 500 stores in the United States. They might be outside of the US. I'm not positive. But he co-authored this book with Steve McIntosh and Carter Phipps, another author. And if you haven't read it, I obviously recommend it. But I pulled it off my bookshelf last week because I just realized that the stuff that I'm working on, my three main pillars in working with leaders is clarity, energy, and ownership. And as I pulled the book back out and started to reread it, I was reminded that the traits of a conscious leader that they define, they've bucketed into these three different dimensions: vision and virtue, mindset and strategy, and people and culture. And as I read it, I couldn't help but think that this is exactly what I mean when I'm talking about leading with clarity, energy, and ownership. So in today's episode, I want to explore how these ideas intersect and how you as a leader can translate them into daily practices that elevate your culture and your company's performance. So let's start with vision and virtue. For each of these categories, I'm going to read you the dimension definition from the book and the attributes they associated with each bucket. For vision and virtue, they write, conscious leaders put purpose first, guided not only by profit, but by a vision for the value they can contribute to the world. They lead with love, treating businesses not as cutthroat competition, but as an opportunity to serve and uplift people and communities. And they strive to always act with integrity, holding themselves to the absolute highest standards in order to earn the trust of those they lead and those they serve. So that is how they define vision and virtue, which is the first category of a conscious leader. And within that category, the attributes that they associate with a conscious leader is putting purpose first, leading with love, and always acting with integrity. So through this, what I take is that conscious leaders know where they're going and why. They have a clear sense of purpose that goes beyond profit, and purpose that inspires people to follow them, not because they have to, but because they want to. And virtue is what gives that vision integrity. It's how you live out your values when things get tough, when the decision isn't obvious, or when no one's watching. And that's why I believe the first dimension of conscious leadership is all about clarity. When you lead with clarity, you give your team a shared language for decision making. That vision, the core values, the mission, everyone knows what you stand for, where you're headed, and how to behave when you get there. In my work with CEOs and leadership teams, I often talk about getting clarity first. I mean, it's one of the first things that we do when I work with a leader is help them define their mission, their vision, their core values, so that they can provide that clarity to their teams, because it cascades. It's a ripple effect. All the way from the top of every corner of your organization, from your executive meetings to your frontline interactions. Because when people know the why, then they can own the how. So here's something to ask yourself in reflection. If I asked each person on your team, or maybe just on your leadership team, to describe your company's vision, or if you haven't defined the vision for them yet, if you haven't put it into words, would they be able to describe it? And would their answers all sound similar, or would they sound very different? If they would sound different, if you haven't defined it, I encourage you to take that next step and make that a priority to really define for yourself where you're going, because honestly, it's not just about your team. I mean, if you don't know where you're headed, if you don't have a clear vision, how can your business grow? You know, if you don't have a vision set, how can you set goals for your organization? So if you don't yet have a vision, I encourage you to define that, write it down, and share it with your team. Next, the second dimension that the authors talk about is mindset and strategy. So let's hear how the authors defined that. So they say that conscious leaders are determined to find win-win-win solutions to every challenge. They innovate and create value, and they build cultures around them that nurture and liberate the creative spirit. They are not blinkered by short-termism. They think long-term about the impact of their actions and choices. I love the language they used here, and the three attributes of a conscious leader that they've bucketed in this mindset and strategy that you should have heard in that description was conscious leaders find win-win solutions, they innovate and create value, and they think long-term. So think about it. This really begins with you, your mindset, your level of awareness, your resilience, and self-regulation. It's the energy source for your entire organization. When you're scattered or depleted, that energy ripples outward. But when you lead with intention, when you protect your focus and show up grounded, your team mirrors that energy. Conscious leaders manage their inner world before they manage others. They stay curious instead of reactive, and strategic instead of scattered. And that's where my second pillar, energy, comes in. Energy is about alignment. It's about channeling your focus toward what matters most and eliminate invisible drains that pull you off course. I see it all the time in organizations, people who care deeply but are exhausted from firefighting, leaders who've become chief problem solvers instead of the chief vision holder. Because when you're always in reaction mode, you can't build strategy. You're just managing chaos. And so, as they described it here, you're finding win-win-win solutions. Win for you, a win for the business, a win for your vendors, a win for your employees. You're innovating and creating values. And I love how they described it, that you build cultures around you that nurture and liberate the creative spirit. I love that language. And then thinking long term, if you have that vision, if you're thinking strategically, then you won't get sidetracked by the short term interruptions that inevitably happen and that can take you and your team off track. It's also how you interact with others. So when I talk about energy, I also talk about how you respond to challenges as a leader, as a conscious leader. And one activity or one concept that I was reminded of recently was Brené Brown's concept of above the line thinking from her book, Dare to Lead. Now, she gives attribution to other authors, and it sounds like where this above the line, below the line thinking originated was the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, which was one of my favorite books early on in my career. Also, it was in Carolyn Taylor's book, Walking the Talk, and then the Conscious Leadership Group, Jim Dethmer, Diana Chapman, and Warner Klimp popularized the framework among coaches and leadership consultants in their book, The 15 Commitments of Conscious Leadership. So lots of different uses of this. Brené Brown didn't create it. She rightfully so, gives credit to those that did, but she is a big proponent of the concept and speaks passionately about it. And so I wanted to share it with you because I think it's an easy way for you to start talking with your team in ways that help you when you might be pulled sideways, when your energy may be taken from you unexpectedly. So the line that they speak of above the line and below the line is fear. It's an invisible boundary between the two broad ways of showing up. Above the line, when fear is present, showing up in more grounded, responsible, conscious ways. Below the line is less conscious, more reactive. And so she describes it that when we're above the line, we are aware of fear, vulnerability, and challenge, but still operating from agency, choice, and values. And we're in the driver's seat. So an example that she gives is someone comes to her and says, "Brené, we just sent this confidential email to the wrong person." And one way that she drops below the line, and how she describes below the line, is when you've dropped into more of a reactive mode. Fear and its derivatives drive us. We may shift into the drama triangle, the victim, the hero, and the villain, and we're less in choice and more driven by defensiveness. And so in that example that she gives, where she talks about the employee coming to her with this mistake that's made, she says her below the line reaction is like, "WTF, how could you have done this? This looks bad on me. This doesn't impact you at all. It's my reputation." Just defensive, victim. She says, "I'll take care of it myself," playing the hero and the villain. "How could you have done this?" So that below the line thinking as a leader, it's energy draining. And when we're leading with that energy, it is negative. You're in fear. And we need to shift to above the line thinking, which is more vulnerable. And instead of playing the hero, the victim, or the villain, we can coach, create, and challenge. And so she said her above the line response to that is, "I appreciate you for letting me know that. I understand that this doesn't happen all the time. What I'd like for us to do is put together a plan for how we can prevent this next time, a system that we could put in place to prevent this from happening next time." And so that she becomes the coach. She offers a challenge and creates a new opportunity to do things differently. So that's what it looks like when we are leading above the line. We're not reacting. We admit, and she even says in that above the line, you can admit that this is a problem. It impacts us all. And let's see how we can prevent doing this again. And so just to kind of recap here, above the line is when fear may be present, but you're still in choice. I feel myself going below the line. I'll take a minute. When you're grounded in values, curiosity, openness, and vulnerability, when you're responsible, intentional, and clear, you're more likely to listen, reflect, and empathize, asking questions. And so when hard stuff happens above the line, you pause, you adjust, and you act from your values rather than reacting from the fear. And below the line is operating from the fear, shame, defensiveness. You go into autopilot in your response, and you fall into one of the roles of the drama triangle, the victim, poor me, the hero, I'll save this, or the villain, why aren't you doing this right? You're less self-aware, you have less agency, you're more reactive, more about proving our protection than learning or leading. Values may be ignored or compromised in this moment, and the culture suffers. There's more blame, less trust, and less connection. So you can see, I mean, even when I put myself in that example, the difference in the energy that I'm feeling when I think about that response below the line, when I'm leading with fear, versus when I'm leading in integrity and vulnerability, and I'm coaching and offering solutions. So here are some practices that we can look at to put this into play in your organization to become a more conscious leader, to be more aware of what things can deplete your energy, but also to be, you know, looking for those win-win-win solutions. I think that fits in perfectly here. When you're innovating and creating value, you're looking for a new way of doing something differently. You're driving and thinking long-term. So if you have awareness, teach people this language about above the line versus below the line. Get Brené's book, Dare to Lead, or listen to some of her podcasts. That's where I was reminded of it recently. And then name it when you feel it. You know, you can say, I'm noticing I'm going below the line. I need a minute. And just that pause allows you to reset, take a walk, take a deep breath, step out of the room. The goal is to not stay below the line, but to quickly recover. I heard from a neuroscientist recently that we experience an emotion for 90 seconds. Anything over that, we're just perpetuating. Allow yourself to step away, feel the emotion, the anger, the fear, whatever it is you're feeling, feel it for 90 seconds, take a walk, take a deep breath, and then come back in after that moment. And you can even address, you know, with them, how could we do this differently next time, and address maybe what it was that put you below the line. And then make it part of your team or your organizational language, included in your frameworks for leading, so that teams not only know about your values, but operating from them. It's a great way to integrate your values. And then finally, moving into the third dimension of the conscious leader is people and culture. This is where it brings it all together. And so I'll read you the definition from the book of their people and culture dimension. Conscious leaders are sensitive to the culture around them and work to constantly evolve the team. They recognize how important it is to regularly revitalize, renewing their own physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual energy, and they have a commitment to continually learn and grow, both personally and professionally. So this is the part that really lights me up, because culture is where conscious leadership becomes visible. Conscious leaders don't just manage people, they empower them, they create systems of trust, accountability, and shared ownership. And that's the final piece of my philosophy, the CEO, the clarity, energy, and ownership. And ownership is about shifting from control to co-creation. It's about giving people both the clarity and the confidence to take initiative, not waiting for permission, but understanding the purpose so deeply that they can act in alignment within it. When leaders model ownership, they create a ripple effect. Meetings become more productive, accountability becomes shared, and culture moves from words on the wall to behaviors and action, which is what we really want. So if you want to build a culture of ownership, here's a simple starting point. This week, identify one decision or project that you can delegate completely. Not halfway, not with caveats, but with trust and support. And then take a step back and watch what happens. Often the biggest shift isn't in the person that you delegate to, it's in you. And the attributes of this third dimension of people and culture are, the three attributes are constantly evolving the team, regularly revitalizing yourself and the team, and continually learning and growing. When leaders model ownership, they create a ripple effect. It's so true. So let's bring this all together. Conscious leadership, as Mackey, McIntosh, and Phipps have described it, is really a blueprint for building an intentional culture. Clarity drives vision and virtue. Your energy creates your mindset and strategy, and ownership cultivates people and culture. When you integrate these, you move from managing people to mobilizing your purpose. You stop reacting to culture. You start shaping it intentionally, sustainably, and consciously. If this idea resonates with you, I'd love for you to join my upcoming free Culture Roadmap webinar series. It's a three-part leadership experience where we're going to dive deeper into these exact concepts, clarity, energy, and ownership, and help you build your roadmap for your culture in 2026. You can sign up at culturecoachwendy.com/webinar series. Because when you lead consciously with clarity of vision, energized focus, and shared ownership, your culture stops being an accident. It becomes your greatest strategic advantage. And that is my goal, is for more leaders like you, more organizations to realize the impact of an intentional culture in your business. So until next time, keep leading with intention. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a colleague, family member, or friend, and like or subscribe to the podcast. I'm Wendy Brand, and this is the Culture Coach Podcast.